I chose this passage because it seemed to reflect a lot of the themes that Tim O'Brien deals with in The Things That Carry. The special starts out with a vivid description of the banks of the river, and this is like the vivid memories that O'Brien talks about during his novel, and how these memories, even though they happened 20 years in the past, stick with soldiers. Another thing I want to talk about is idealism versus reality. Norman Bowker wants to believe that the war hasn't touched other aspects of his life. So he imagines his father saying, "Hey, I'm your father." Like his father is perfect, wants to hear exactly what his son has to say about the war. But later, Norman Bowker faces reality and says that his father has his own war and cannot listen to his son's memoirs. This reflects Tim O'Brien wanting to tell a story and creating his own explication of a story, just like Tim makes up his own story about himself and Norman Bowker. The town also reflects this idealism versus reality. The town seems normal. There's a woman in pedal pushers casting for bullheads, for example. But at the same time, the lake is bad for swimming and fishing. This leads to the next theme I'm going to talk about. The town has a duality. It appears quaint and seems as if it succeeds in escaping the war, but in practical terms, and in this young man's memory, it cannot. The lake portrays this duality and reflects Robinson's housekeeping in that, just like all the aspects of Norman Bowker's life cannot escape the war, when the town people try to control the lake, they cannot escape its destructive force. People are apparently in control of the lake. They fish in it and take their motorboats out into it. However, a man's motorboat becomes stalled and the lake is apparently bad for fishing and swimming. Norman's friend Mike Steff represents a casualty like that of Kiowa. The town cannot escape the war. There is a contrast between the quaint fishing and music and the deadness of the town that reflects this duality. Although the town could not talk and would not listen, the place could only blink and shrug. It had no memory, therefore no guilt. It was a brisk, polite town. It did not know shit about shit and did not care to know. At the same time, the town he was touring seemed dead. It reflects the soldiers who have died in battle. The workmen who are preparing the fireworks also appear like soldiers with dark and smudgy faces. Norman mentions that later they would blow color into the sky. The lake would sparkle with reds and blues and greens, like a mirror, and the picnickers would make low sounds of appreciation. These colors in the lake are identical to those later described as the colors of flares sent up by soldiers. The town cannot escape the war in this man's memory and even appreciates it. Similarly, Norman's father cannot escape his own personal war, even if he does not listen to his son's experiences. The duality of the town in Norman's mind demonstrates how he cannot escape the war, even if he thinks he can, because nothing around him can in his own mind. Norman Bowker died because he cannot spread his pain out, and everything in his life seems to be related to the war in some way. Similarly, the town is dead because it does not share its feelings about the war. The passage at the beginning of 144 about shit, he knew shit, it was his specialty, someday he'd give a lecture on the topic, is comedic in its irony. This comedy reflects what we talked about with Catch-22. Norman Bowker is trying to escape the harsh reality of his war experiences by making a joke about them. Finally, Norman grasps the only power he can attain through his everyday actions. And this reflects a common theme among soldiers, how they're powerless to decide their own fates. So they try little ways to have control of their own lives. Norman savors his power in everyday actions. For example, driving. He clamps the steering wheel slightly right of center, which produces smooth clockwise motion against the curve of the road. Also, he relishes his ability to tell time without a clock. 5:55, he decides, 6 o'clock tops. He also imagines the feel of his tongue against the truth when he imagines telling his father about the war. This is like the power Tim O'Brien wields in making decisions about the truth in his novel.